From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just more than 1 year ago, January 2017 in Washington, D.C. It was Inauguration Day, and President Donald Trump was riding along the parade route in his motorcade. But the crowds were smaller than he wanted, and the president was not spending much time mingling with supporters. He stayed inside, mostly. But there was one point in which the president and his family stopped to get out and wave to supporters. Do you remember that moment? The cameras were focused on the Trump family. But investigative reporter David K. Johnston says the larger story was about why the Trumps got out at that particular location. It's an example of how Johnston says the American media has often overlooked or missed significant stories about the Trump presidency. And so he took it upon himself to compile these stories in a new book. It's called It's Even Worse Than You Think: What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. So what was happening in that particular spot on the presidential parade route? Johnston writes, quote, "This was not some random point along the route, but one carefully chosen to send a message. The Trump's stroll occurred outside the old post office and clock tower, which Trump had just converted into the Trump International Hotel Washington." End quote. So while the media viewed the moment in the typical lens of a presidential inauguration, David K. Johnston keyed in on the fact that Trump was sending a message. And Johnston says the al-Sabah Kuwaiti ruling family noticed that message, changing the location of their annual party to Trump's hotel from the Four Seasons. Months later, Trump held public meetings with the al-Sabah family, and Trump told reporters that the relationship between the United States and Kuwait has never been stronger. He added, he is jealous of Amir Sabah al-Samad al-Sabah's plane because it's larger. What else have we been missing in the last year? David K. Johnston is here to make the case, the author of It's Even Worse Than You Think. The book is out now. Good to have you back here. How are you?
Terrific. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I keyed in on that point because, you know, you make the point that in the book that you view Trump as unique among American presidents. In other words, there've been good presidents, there've been great presidents, there've been bad presidents, mediocre presidents, but none quite like this one. Because why?
Because Donald Trump's presidency, unlike all the others who tried one way or another, whether they were corrupt, honest, good, bad, middling, is not about America. It is about Donald Trump, period, full stop.
And that even contrasts, as you say, with Richard Nixon, who you said resigned in an act of patriotism. You called that patriotic.
Absolutely. I mean, when Richard Nixon realized the game was up, when three Republican senators came and told him, you're going to be impeached and you're going to lose a trial, Nixon put the country first and resigned. Donald Trump is about Donald Trump. He never did a single day of public service, not one. His entire life, which he has spent swindling people, cheating workers, including illegal immigrants out of their pay, discriminating, being deeply involved with Russian mobsters, Italian mobsters, Georgian mobsters, Azerbaijani mobsters, and most importantly, doing favors and being deeply entangled with a major international drug trafficker, a mob associate, in a deals that make no sense whatsoever, unless, and then everything makes sense, Donald Trump was in business with this drug trafficker.
And so,
and that's all from public records, by the way. This is in my books. I cite the court records, the letters he wrote, the official investigations. It's all in the public record.
Well, that's why this is important, because we just got done over the last month or so with sort of the public examination of a book by another ostensible journalist, Michael Wolff, who I think now rather quickly famously said, when someone said, you know, well, how do you know all this stuff is true? And he says, well, if it's about Donald Trump and it sounds true, it is true. Well, not a good journalistic standard at all. That's embarrassing.
Michael Wolff is a gossip writer. But let me say this. Well, I'm sure there are things that aren't quite right in his book, and he does not honor his word. If I tell you I'm not going to attribute something to you, which I rarely do, but there are occasions, I don't attribute it to you. He runs roughshod and ignores those rules. On the other hand, I got to say, his book, Fire and Fury, confirms everything that was in my book, The Making of Donald Trump. So, I've sort of a mixed view about this. He's a gossip guy, but the stuff he has. One of my children, grown children, actually asked me, did he go through your book and base all the things he asked about on your book? And I went, well, I don't know, but it could be.
But the difference now is with two Trump books out there on the scene right now, Fire and Fury, and now It's Even Worse Than You Think by David K. Johnston. At least David, and I'm not sitting here, you know, this is not an interview based in hagiography. I mean, we're going to have a lot of conversation about what's in the book and why you feel the way you do. But I've seen you on Twitter, for example. People challenge you, and you always say, prove where it's wrong, and I'll correct it.
Well, I just ask him, I say, if you can show any error, we'll correct it. And in fact, there is one error in my book. It's on page 158. There's no earlier draft. I don't know what happened where my brain just slipped, but I name Hezbollah in a sentence that makes no sense. And what the sentence should say, and future printings will say, is reference to other Middle East countries or other Middle East terrorist groups. My mind just slipped and nobody caught it. I didn't catch it. My two readers who read the manuscript didn't catch it. The editors didn't catch it. You know, so there's one error in there, and I owned up to it right away, and we fixed it.
And if we'll find more, we'll let you know.
Yes, please. If there's a mistake, you know, my policy is you promptly and forthrightly correct. We make mistakes. We all make mistakes. The issue is, do you deal with them promptly and forthrightly?
All right, so let's talk about some of the facts, because I keyed in on that parade route story, and I thought that was a great juxtaposition, David contrasting with most of the media coverage, which is sort of the pomp and circumstance. Oh, here's the family. What are they wearing? They're waving. And David is noticing, oh, that's where they got out on the parade route. It just happens to be right near the hotel. And so let me read, if you don't mind, from page 15, because what happens when all of this is going down? Quote, average room rates at Trump hotels fell during much of 2016, but right after the election, rates soared 20%. Similar hotels increased their rates by about 1% compared to the prior year. After Trump took office, luxury hotel prices in America were flat, except for his hotels, where rates soared by as much as 40%, The Economist magazine concluded after analyzing published rates. Documents filed with the government's property management arm, the General Services Administration, revealed that at Trump's Washington Hotel, the average revenue per guest night was $653. That was triple the average of all D.C. hotels and well above what other high-end hotels charged. And you go on to cite everything from the cost of an average steak, $60, to all
that's
of them,
the cheapest steak.
The cheapest steak. To all of the money being rung up in Trump hotels, his supporters would tell you, okay, what? So he's getting rich? You're not allowed to get rich in America?
Well, the Constitution has the word emoluments in it three times. Now, that's a hoary 18th century word, but it means any economic gain. The founders of our country and the framers of our Constitution wanted to make sure that we had an honest government. They knew that there were kings in Europe, particularly English kings, who were secretly on the payroll of the French or other governments. And so they said the president is not to receive any compensation except the salary and perks with his job. Well, Donald Trump, who said, there's so much to do, I'm never going to leave the White House, never going to leave the White House on the campaign trail, has spent one-third of his days at his properties, Mar-a-Lago, his New Jersey golf course, a little bit at Trump Tower, where taxpayers, federal, state, and local, are spending enormous amounts of money on everything from renting rooms to golf carts. His Washington hotel, where he sent a clear signal by taking this turn on the street right after his inauguration to anyone who wants favors, the signal was rent rooms in our hotel, as the Kuwaiti government did when it moved its party, buy our steaks, etc. And that's just absolutely improper under our Constitution.
And so now there's even a lawsuit that I did not know about until David's book. So this is another good example of something that is happening that doesn't get a lot of broad media coverage, but David's book keys in on it. It's the Cork Wine Bar. It's a case in which a small business owner is challenging the president's right to use the office of the presidency for personal profit. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is a business that was set up designed to attract lobbyists and members of Congress and politicians, and they had a nice business going. Until Trump's property opened. And by getting out on the sidewalk that day, which the network television cameras never showed where they were, never explained what was happening, all lobbyists and foreign governments got the message, you will pay tribute to the Trump administration. The lease for that building says that no federal employee may be involved in the lease. The General Services Administration has decided to look the other way about that. And let me point out that Donald Trump is our employee. President of the United States is not our ruler. We don't have a king. He's our subordinate. He's our employee. And so this Cork Wine Bar has lost a great deal of business, as have some other businesses, as people trying to curry favor with Trump head over to his properties. It's absolutely prohibited by our Constitution. The problem is, the only court ruling we have says that you as an individual or a competing business don't have standing to enforce the Constitution. And if Congress doesn't do its job and act as a check and a balance, then you get away with things.
Cork Wine Bar gave three possible options to remedy this, one of which was the president could simply resign the presidency and then continue trying to exert his influence. I don't think they're going to go with option three. But the
chances that Donald Trump will ever resign the presidency are roughly equal to the sun rising in the west.
Okay, so... in this case, as of the publication of the book, it wasn't settled yet. And my guess is, given history, it probably doesn't go far, but... are you going to be following this one? Is this one to at least keep an eye on?
Well, yes. We've already had one case thrown out. I didn't think it was a particularly good case in New York by a hotel that's in Lower Manhattan. The Trump's hotel is at Central Park. But the underlying issue here that the president of the United States should not be profiting is so clear. You know, Jimmy Carter sold his peanut warehouse, a two-bit business, because people said it was improper. Other presidents have put all of their stocks and bonds into a blind trust. Donald Trump's is in what I call the eyes wide open blind trust. And he's even said, well, my sons are telling me, you know, how we're doing at the businesses. He doubled the membership fee to join Mar-a-Lago right after the election from $100,000 to $200,000. And this is consistent with the Donald Trump, you know, that I've known for almost 30 years. Donald is about, you know, he is the greatest among us. And by the way, Evan, that anyone would question that he should be president, if not leader of the whole world, what's wrong with you?
Well, in one of the Amazon reviews, a 3-star review of David's book, the reviewer said that appreciated a lot of the extensive journalism and work, but then said, quote, I didn't need 14 pages about the constitutional crisis of Trump getting rich off the government via golf cart and room charges.
Well, it's not 14 pages on that, but you know, I do go into this, and I go into it for a very simple reason. The Constitution is unequivocal about this issue, and you know, we owe our liberties and our wealth to the rules in that Constitution, and we should be paying attention to them and getting better over time, not worse.
Now, the next question I have, before we get into more of the details here, and listeners, I also want to open it up to you. If you've got questions or comments for author, investigative journalist David K. Johnston, he's a Pulitzer Prize winner, and his new book is just out. It's called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. You can call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can also see David in person on Sunday, and I'll happen to be there with him, Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. at Finger Lakes Community College. It's part of the Ewing Forum. It's their series of speakers, and David is talking about, well, the theme is essentially his book, but the talk is titled Trump Day 365, What Just Happened? And you can get tickets online now, and that's at Finger Lakes Community College, 4 p.m. Sunday afternoon, and I'll be there as a moderator for that discussion. But we'll take your phone calls and questions. I want to listen, if we could, to one of the comments from a Trump voter. Now, there have been a number of thought pieces in just about every major publication. All the networks have done, what do Trump voters think a year later? But I want to ask David about what he thinks the book could accomplish or might not accomplish. This is a Donald Trump supporter in an Ohio panel talking to CNN. It's a man of color, an immigrant, talking about why he still supports Donald Trump. He said he's the only man looking out for the little guy. And then the Trump voter told CNN this.
Let me tell you, if Jesus Christ gets down off the cross and told me Trump is with Russia, I would tell him, hold on a second, I need to check with the president if it's true.
Why do you believe Donald Trump over everybody else? Why?
I believe in him. He's a good man. He has taken so much shots for us.
Donald Trump is anything but a good man. I mean, of all the nasty Graham emails I've gotten, my favorite's from a woman in Indiana. Dear Mr. Johnston, now that we have a fine Christian family man of integrity in the White House, Donald Trump is a guy who hired 200 illegal immigrants and then refused to pay them their measly $4 an hour wage. He's been in bed with major league criminals his entire life. He, like many successful criminals, and let me be clear, Donald Trump is a major league criminal. He's never been arrested. Most mob bosses are never arrested. He's done business with all sorts of horrible people. I document in the book that he cheated on his income taxes and was found in two civil trials to have done so, and pretty harsh language from the judges. He's faked documents. He's tried to hide financial records. But he sold himself to the public, and unfortunately, my peers in journalism failed to do what we call a scrub. I can tell you, or could look up very quickly from news accounts, Barack Obama's playmates in Indonesia when he was in kindergarten, the boys he smoked marijuana with when he was in high school in Honolulu, and women he dated when he was a student at Columbia and Harvard Law. There were no stories like that about Donald Trump. None. He ran such a fascinating and unusual campaign that nobody went, and except me, basically, and dug into the record. And, of course, I've been covering Donald for almost 30 years now, and I have what I'm pretty sure is the world's largest collection of Trump documents, thousands of pages of court records and other official proceedings. He sold himself as this man bought it, as somebody who he is not. And I'll give you one good example. There are all these Christian ministers who are praising him. Donald Trump calls anyone who turns the other cheek from the Sermon on the Mount a fool, an idiot, and a schmuck. And he says his personal philosophy is something explicitly rejected in the New Testament. Donald's philosophy is revenge. If somebody simply declines to do you a favor, he says, hit him in the face 15 times. And he says what he gets pleasure from in life is destroying the lives of other people. And he said this in writing, in speeches with videotapes over long periods of time. So the a lot of people who they bought this carefully crafted image, they bought some of the things he was saying about the economy, which, by the way, Donald Trump's economic arguments, Evan, all came out of my trilogy that I've been on this station talking about, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print, and with a bit of an evil twist to it. And so there's a little irony for me in that Donald Trump's economic message to people is what I said in 2012, somebody runs for president on what's in these books, they'll get elected.
But I asked this question and I play that soundbite. That's a man saying Jesus Christ himself could come down off the cross and say Trump's with Russia and I'm not going to believe Jesus until Trump tells me himself, is an indication that this book or any book isn't going to change minds. Do you think your book can change minds? Is it designed to change minds?
Well, I want people to know what he is doing to our government. Let's remember, this is a democracy. It's our government. He's the steward. And what I do in the book is show what hasn't been covered by my peers in journalism. 40% of journalism jobs have disappeared. So there's been very good coverage of Trump's statements and his tweets, but very little coverage of what he is doing to our government. And he is putting your job in danger, your future income in danger, your health, your children, grandchildren, if you're my age, great-grandchildren. Their future will be worse because of things he's doing that I document in the book.
Do you agree that many voters or some voters are just not persuadable?
Oh, sure. Sure. And that's true left or right in this country. There's a percentage of people at either end who have a very fixed view about the world and you're not going to change them. I want people to know who he really is, what he's really doing. And, you know, as with my previous book, I urge you, if you can find a mistake in the book, report it. We've had one in both books. One.
All right. Before we get into more of the details, let's get some of our listeners on the program. And we're going to go with Joe in Gates first. This is Joe on with David K. Johnston.
They're on the car, on the shelves or off the cart.
Joe, are you there? Hi, Joe.
Yeah.
Hi, Joe. Joe, you're back on hold. End your conversation with someone else and talk to David K. Johnston and me. Bob in Mendon. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. I almost don't even know where to begin with this, but even before he was elected, things happened that I thought, oh my gosh, that's it. That's going to ruin him. And starting from the Billy Bush comment, I thought for sure that was going to be it. And then, you know, once he was elected, more and more things come up and I think, okay, this is going to be it. They're going to teach the guy. He's almost like Teflon in nothing sticks. And I know his whole thing is, you know, he constantly says crooked Hillary when he himself couldn't be more crooked. And the whole idea is deflection. I'm wondering, one, why nothing seems to have an impact, all the things that he's done and said and continues to do, and two, what would it take for somebody to say, okay, now it's time?
Bob, those are really good questions. First of all, the 90% of Americans have real grievances. That's what my trilogy was about, and that Donald captured when he said he's going to drain the swamp, and ran against Goldman Sachs, even though he turned Washington into a federally protected swamp for Goldman Sachs and its clients, and the tax bill is a Goldman Sachs shopping list.
Right.
It's because Donald was able to distill something that Hillary Clinton did not. To a lot of people, Hillary Clinton's policy objectives, which would have benefited large numbers of people, and I don't, by the way, to be clear, think she would have been a great president, but they were blah, blah, blah to them. Donald spoke to their pockets, and they believed him that he was their champion, not understanding that he was the wolf in sheep's clothing. So it's not surprising. I mean, the bottom 90% of Americans' income in 2012, adjusted for inflation, was smaller than in 1967. And the recovery since then, which began in 2013 when Obama was president, has been slow and steady, but not enough to make up for people and their feeling, their reasonable feeling, they've been had by Washington. And they have, through all these policies I've exposed that redistribute income upward in ways that, you know, nobody knew about before I wrote them.
Well, one thing that I've noticed that he does is he'll tweet one thing to his base. And I don't think his base is, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but I don't think by and large they're watching any CBC or BBC or even CNN, because what he's saying in public in those venues, he's tweeting the exact opposite to his base. So I think that's part of the reason his base is still sticking with him, because I don't think they really realize some of the things that he's doing. And I certainly feel that they don't realize that nothing he's doing is helping them.
Well, I exactly. I mean, I hope that a lot of people who are Donald supporters will read my book, because he's doing all sorts of things inimical to the interests of ordinary folks. For example, Trump proposed that if you're a disabled veteran, and my dad was 100% disabled veteran of World War II, so I pay attention to this issue. When you reached retirement age, some veterans would have their income cut from $35,000 a year to $13,000 a year. He proposed rounding down checks to veterans. This was done after he took office. Both of those are contrary to the interest of veterans, but they got very little coverage. Very few people know about them. And I go through the book and show you in department and federal agency, because there's almost no journalists out there covering our federal agencies, how the actions that they've taken and are documented from the public record are inimical to the interests of most people and contrary to what he promised when he ran. But if you watch Fox News and listen to Breitbart, you write a letter like the woman who wrote to me from Indiana about our fine Christian family man of integrity in the White House.
Listeners, if you want to call the program, we're for David K. Johnston, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Let's try again with Joe and Gates. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi. It's frustrating to me. Why is this information coming out now? Why did this information come out before the election, before this person was elected?
Joe, that's just a great question. And you know what? I wrote more than 25 articles laying out these things before the election. I wrote a book, The Making of Donald Trump.
But it hasn't made headlines, you know. It's one-sided.
Joe, that's
the both sides of the issue.
Joe, that's the exact point I was going to get to. A dozen television crews from outside the United States, from as far away as Japan, have come to my house in Brighton to interview me about what was in my book and my reporting during the campaign. But ABC, NBC, and CBS, nothing. PBS took out in their TV reports everything I said about Donald's criminal connections. This was a real failure of journalism in this country.
He'd been put into office unless he took care of what was obligated to do, as any other politician has to do. You know. And besides that, why we had to hear about the Russian stuff after he's elected, before. That was going, somebody had to know about that beforehand.
Yeah, Obama knew about it. Well, Joe, Obama knew about that and made a decision that it would look like he was interfering in the election if he brought it out. I mean, we can all come to a judgment about that. But that was a decision that the president of the United States made, that he was not going to bring this stuff up at the time because he didn't want to be accused of interfering in the election.
Shouldn't we also wait for Robert Mueller before we decide that there was actual collusion?
Oh, no. Collusion is not a crime, okay? The issue is conspiracy, and there is no question the Russians were helping the Trumps, and they knew it, and I'll tell you why. Go to the internet, read the first email from Rob Goldstone on June 6th of 2016 to Donald Trump Jr., and about the fourth paragraph, and the exact quote is in the book, it says, as part of Russia's effort to help. That isn't a, hey, would you like the help of a hostile foreign power?
But is it conspiracy?
Oh, sure. It's absolutely a conspiracy under our conspiracy statutes. And absolutely it's a criminal conspiracy under our conspiracy statutes. And I think when Mueller's report comes out, and I don't believe this stuff, it's going to be a few weeks. That's the Trump's lawyers trying to control Trump. We're going to see that it was much more extensive than we believe. They've got cooperating witnesses now, including General Michael Flynn. And I'm confident it will turn out to be much worse than we imagined.
The journalist who brought us essentially Edward Snowden, Glenn Greenwald, who now lives in Brazil and still does a lot of work and founded The Intercept, says that this is all a red herring, that we are missing the focusing on Russia, that the Trump administration is so corrupt in other ways that it's going to be a distraction on Russia and we should focus on everything else. David?
Well, I agree with Glenn, whom I interviewed a couple of years ago when I was in Brazil, that all the other stuff is more important. That's primarily what my book is about, what's going to happening to our government. On the other hand, and I think he's completely wrong, Donald Trump, at an absolute minimum, does not have fidelity to the United States of America. At an absolute minimum, his own statements tell you that he has divided loyalties, that he has denounced our intelligence agencies and praised the Kremlin, that he has disclosed secrets to foreign minister and the U.S. ambassador to Russia, from Russia to the U.S. in meetings in the White House, a meeting in the White House. These are all very disturbing. And Donald Trump has been doing business with Russian oligarchs in ways that make no economic sense since 1983. I document some of them in the book. They make perfect sense, however, if Vladimir Putin was investing in someone he thought might someday become valuable. And, you know, venture capitalists invest in 100 deals. 95 of them, they lose every dollar. The next four of them make up for the 95 that lost. And then you hit one grand slam home run like Google. Well, Donald Trump is Vladimir Putin's Google. He got his preferred candidate in the White House.
Now, I want to read an email from a listener named James who said, another anti-Trump show? What happened to the Evan Dawson that wouldn't mention his name? You're just catering to your audience, not challenging them. Let me ask.
Please challenge me.
No, I think he's also saying not challenging your audience. James is assuming that there's a lot of anti-Trump listeners. I assure you, James, there are listeners from all parts of the spectrum for this program, and we're proud of that, and we try to be mindful of that. So I'm reading your email to challenge myself here, but I want to ask David, who's been a longtime investigative journalist, longer than I have, not to date either one of us, David, but I find Trump to be very difficult to sort of, I don't believe in the sort of the Cronkite fable of objective, human beings have biases, so I believe in knowing our biases, being self-aware, and making sure that, for example, I host a talk show, my biases are not going to be the only thing that drives who gets booked, etc. But, this is the hardest political coverage I've ever had because of how unique it has been.
Well, you know, James, listen, I sympathize with you 100% about this, and all I can say is, I cite sources in my book. I have what I'm confident is the world's largest collection of Trump documents. I've covered the man for 30 years, and I have a 50-year track record of saving taxpayers, according to Congress, a minimum of $250 billion in 10 years, getting people sent to prison, getting senior executives fired. I have ruined the careers of many more Democrats than Republicans by exposing what they did, and I'm the only journalist in America whose expose of a corrupt broadcasting chain's news department, or what was the news department was ordered to do by its owner, was forced out of business. So, you know, I've got everything I write is signed, it has my name on it, and I cite sources for it. And, you know, having known Donald Trump for many, many years, I'm not going to beat around the bush about who Donald is. Donald is a major league criminal who, like most major criminals, has never been indicted. He has beaten four grand jury investigations. He's been found twice to have engaged in income tax fraud. He has confessed to sales tax fraud. And I can go on and on and on with enough to fill two books about the public record on Donald without even going into our many conversations with each other.
We're late for our only break. If you're on the phone, we're going to come back to your phone calls for David K. Johnston. His new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. The cover of the book, I'm going to ask David if that's a fire or...
Donald's hair?
A hairdo.
Yeah, that's exactly
the
point.
I guess it's supposed to be either or. Okay. Yeah. That's not... Are you an artist? That's not your
design. No. The artist did a terrific job there of doing what artists should do.
It's Even Worse Than You Think is the book, and we'll come back to your phone calls with the journalist, the Pulitzer-winning journalist David K. Johnston, next. Coming up in our second hour, it's called lunch shaming, and it shouldn't happen. Everyone agrees on that, but it does in some places. Kids living in poverty, either struggling to afford lunch, or maybe they forgot to bring the quarter they need for lunch. What happens? Well, sometimes they're shown compassion. Sometimes their food is tossed in a school garbage can. What can happen to change that? We'll discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. David K. Johnston and I were just talking during our brief break. You know, James sent that critical email. I appreciate that, James. And I want everyone to let me know how you feel about the program. And if there's something you don't like, I want to hear it. David wants to hear it if you find errors.
Yeah, my email is in both this book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, and The Making of Donald Trump. That book is in 11 languages all over the world. If you can find any error in the book, email me about it. I will forthrightly and promptly correct. I've done that my whole life. So I look forward to, showing where I've got something factually wrong, if I have.
All right, Bernard in Fairport next. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yes, I like to say Dave for his work. I remember he talked to a CEO of a oil company, and he told the guy he needed to look at his pipes. And when he did look at them, they found out there were problems in it. So it just seems to me that the nice thing, the great thing about Dave is he looks at things, if you will, in an unusual way, but in an honest way. It's like, I can't understand why we keep track of so many lies that this president says, but we don't seem to take it important. It just seems to me that people like David K. Johnston are needed to make us safe, and it just doesn't seem to me like they're given enough places to do so. Anyway, David, thanks very much. I really appreciate all of your books, and I believe you're very honest.
Thank you, Bernard.
Take care.
Bernard, thank you for that. Before we get back to your phone calls, let me play another audio clip that I think goes to one of the themes in David's book. The book is It's Even Worse Than You Think. It's just out. It's about the first year of the Trump administration. And one of David's concerns is that this is a president that, in David's view, is incompetent, not someone who is interested in excellence. And forget your political affiliation. As David has said in other programs, whether you liked Mitt Romney or not, he was a competent guy and had been a competent manager at business. Forget what you think of George W. Bush or Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush. These were people with competence who were interested in appointing people with whatever mission they had in mind. Even again, everybody's got different ideologies, but it was mission-oriented, it was competence-oriented. Here is sound, just a few months ago, of Senator John Kennedy, a Republican from Louisiana, questioning in a hearing Matthew Spencer Peterson, President Donald Trump's nominee for a district court judgeship. The reason this goes viral, by the way, is it's a Republican senator, not a Democrat, questioning a Republican nominee that the president wanted to be a judge, and it turned out that the nominee never really been a judge and doesn't know anything about it. Let's listen.
Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Okay. Have you ever taken a deposition?
I was involved in taking depositions when I was associate at Wiley Ryan when I first came out of law school. But that was.
Have you ever how many depositions?
I would I'd be struggling to remember.
But less than 10.
Yes.
Less than 5.
Probably somewhere in that range.
Have you ever tried taking a deposition by yourself?
I believe no.
Okay. Have you ever argued a motion in state court?
I have not.
Have you ever argued a motion in federal court?
No.
That's a minute of five, and there's 5 minutes. We could have played the whole five. And that's a Republican senator questioning the president's nominee for a district court judge position, who later, by the way, after that clip went viral, withdrew. Is that, David, an example of incompetence or a lack of interest in expertise?
Oh, absolutely. And the Trump administration has done even worse than putting in utterly incompetent people like, say, Ben Carson, who was a great surgeon but knows nothing about housing, and he's housing and urban development secretary, and who believes, by the way, that the pyramids in Egypt were not tombs for pharaohs but granaries. Donald Trump's team has loosed what I call political termites into our government. They are eating away at its substance, and you don't see them because they're not appointees who were put in the public eye. There are no Senate hearings on them. They're supposed to only serve 130 days. Many of them are still there as we enter the second year of Donald Trump, the White House reality show. And they are doing terrific damage to our government. And I go through agencies and show you how your income, your job, your safety are all being damaged by these people, and many of them come right out of the industries they're supposed to regulate. For example, we have this student loan problem in America, more than $1 trillion of student loan debt, and much of it to for-profit colleges that were of little value, and some of them have gone broke. And who does the Trump administration bring in to address this problem? Two executives from the companies that created the problem. This is not the fox guarding the hen house. This is bringing in the fox to redesign the hen house so that the foxes get all they want.
Let me also, before we get back to the phone calls, ask you about the unfilled positions, because what you just talked about was who he has appointed or who he has hired or brought in, but there are also a number of ambassadorships unfilled.
More than half of ambassadorships are unfilled, including countries that are of terrific importance to us in terms of terrorism, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Libya, Jordan, no U.S. ambassador. Donald Trump fired everybody, where most presidents leave the current ambassadors in place, especially the career rather than political ambassadors, until new ones are appointed. And so when major trade deals are being discussed, we don't have anybody at the table. We don't even know about it. When it would be important to know that at a party by the dictator in country X, that his brother shows up with a different mistress, which can be incredibly valuable intelligence and important to your and my safety as Americans, we don't have anybody there. This is just appalling. And as time goes by, Trump is falling further and further behind the appointment processes of Barack Obama, George W. Bush, et cetera.
And you say when we're not in the game, when we're not even at the table, we can miss important things. And you point to China a number of times in the book, including the Regional Comprehensive Economic Program. What's that?
Yeah, I want a Regional Economic Partnership.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wonder how many people listening have ever even heard of the RCEP.
I hadn't until you.
Okay. Donald Trump came into office and immediately killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I've been on this show and many others as one of the most prominent critics of that deal because it gave more power to monopolists and it took away power from individuals. It needed to be fixed. Trump just killed it. He didn't do anything to replace it. China stepped into that void and has an alliance of 15 Pacific Rim countries, not us, and India, 16 countries. And basically China's emissaries are saying, you need to pivot away from the United States. It's in serious decline. Look at who is in their White House. You want a future that's prosperous? You want to turn to Beijing. And when I was in Australia speaking, the keynote speaker at an international tax conference, one of the things I learned from the academics and the government officials I met and the professors was Australia, our most loyal ally in the world, an absolute lapdog to us, is starting to tilt away from us towards Beijing. This is awful. And yet there's not even any news about the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which you can read about in my book, and why it matters whether you and your children and your grandchildren are going to have good jobs.
Tony in Geneseo is feeling a little bit of exasperation about this. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, I'm not exasperated, and I very much appreciate the analysis that your guest has done. I mean, logic is my business, and, you know, I'm all for logical arguments. But the only issue I have is you know, and it's not just your guests, other people who are exacerbated with the folks that don't see the logic. And Trump is not a logical guy, and people don't make decisions on logic alone. And the emotional case isn't being made. Somehow we have to do a better job, like in Kleitman's book, right, Thinking Fast and Slow, to make these emotional arguments, to somehow try to transcend logic, because it simply isn't working.
Tony, thank you. Go ahead.
Well, you know, as a journalist, I've spent 51 years at this, finding public records you didn't know about or making connections or getting people to confess to crimes. And it's a very logic-driven business. It's not an emotionally driven business. But, I mean, there's a good point here. There are different ways we learn and we know things. And all I can do is what I can do.
In other words, if this doesn't move the public needle at all, that's not your job.
My job is to give you the information you don't have that's important. You know, I'm allowed one bias as a journalist when I was a reporter. Now, I'm now in the opinion business as well. But as a reporter, the bias was this is important and that's not. And given, you know, the awards I've won and the laws that have passed and the CEOs have been fired and people voted out of office, more Dems than Republicans because of my work, I have a pretty good track record on the fact side record here of figuring out important things and there being major changes as a result.
One of my first real jobs, and I mean real job, one of my first real internal jobs. So let me put it this way. I was in West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia, and it was right after October 2000 in Ashland, Kentucky, where a coal slurry impoundment ruptured. If you don't know what a coal slurry impoundment is, if you look them up, if you Google them from afar in the air, they look like lakes, and they're almost pretty. They're very shiny, but they are not pretty things.
Deadly toxic.
Yeah. The coal slurry is the chemical combination of water and chemicals used to clean coal, and instead of drying it out and turning it into bricks, it's cheaper just to turn it into sludge, and then they fill up these valleys with these things, and there's more than 100 of them in West Virginia, more in Kentucky. One of them in October 2000 ruptured into the underground mines. It flowed out into hundreds of miles of waterways. It wiped out wildlife. It threatened drinking water. And in West Virginia, when I was working there, one of my first, you know, sort of real efforts was reporting on this massive new impoundment called the Brushy Fork Slurry Impoundment, with 7 billion gallons of coal slurry slated for it, and real questions about, well, how much bedrock between the underground mines and all this stuff. I don't want to get into the weeds. It was my first time understanding what Massey Energy was. Don Blankenship, who subsequently got sentenced to a year in jail, and a lot of people thought he should have gotten a lot more. As a young reporter, it was eye-opening stuff. Well, now David reports that this is an example of the kinds of regulations that are going away, of the kinds of policing to make sure you can do this, but here are the protections necessary. You said they're going away.
Oh, absolutely. At the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, who hopes to become a U.S. senator from Oklahoma and wants to destroy the EPA, has ordered the staffs to write detailed, lengthy reports running hundreds of pages with attachments on articulating every single weakness in trying to enforce America's pollution laws that Richard Nixon signed, the two biggest ones, the Clean Air and the Clean Water Acts. And the staff are then called into these meetings, except for a few occasional question, as I recount in the book, to clarify a point. They sit stone-faced. They then take all the documentation, and the assumption is, of course, they're handing it over to the polluters because now they know exactly where the weaknesses are in the government's cases so that were the government to bring another case, they can attack it. This is deeply disturbing, and you're not going to die tomorrow from asthma or cancer or have heart disease because of these actions. Trump will be long out of office even if he's reelected, but this will have a devastating consequence in the future, and this is going on in agencies all the way through the government.
You talk a lot about regulation and sort of if the disposition is all regulation is bad or arbitrarily cut regulation by X, you told MSNBC's Joy Reid that one example, it sounds strange, is sleep apnea rules.
Right. Every airline pilot is tested to see if he has sleep apnea, something I have. It causes you to involuntarily fall asleep. I fell asleep on the highway one day, and but for a truck driver's blasting horn, he would have plowed right into the nose of my car. So I've been treated for it. Easy to treat. Well, we've had terrific accidents, Evan, by train operators, bus drivers, and truck drivers who didn't know they had sleep apnea. the Obama administration put in place a rule that said you should be tested. And they should also require the government pay for the testing. An out-of-work truck driver shouldn't have to endure the cost. But it was killed by the new administration. There will be people who will die. There will be families on vacation in their station wagon who will die because of this rule. Most of the regulations we have, and I used to teach regulatory law at Syracuse, are there because of a need demonstrated by human behavior.
So arbitrarily cutting regulations is different than saying some regulation is superfluous.
That's right. That's exactly right. You want to cut those regulations that create inefficiency and don't solve problems. And I'm totally in favor of that. And I've cited examples in the past. But you don't want to go in and simply say to industry, what regulation will help make you more profitable in polluting, in safety, et cetera? And that's what they're doing.
And again, listeners, if you're sitting at a desk or listening online, look up the Ashland, Kentucky coal slurry impoundment disaster of October 2000. Those are probably pictures you've never seen. And the concern is, you know, how do you prevent more of that? That's part of the example of regulations that David's talking about. So these are just some of the examples in the book. I'm going to get back to your phone calls. John in Rochester next with David K. Johnston. Go ahead, John.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just, you know, I'm listening and this is a good conversation. And I just wanted to say that I've noticed that in with the Trump administration, but this has been going on before, is the kind of redefinition of what words mean and what the truth is, like Kellyanne Conway changing what tax means in her talk in front of media. And David, you mentioned that the media didn't pick up on these. Not very hard to find nuances with, you know, the inauguration parade. There's a lot of stuff right now I think they're not picking up on. Just blatant, you know, half-truth is just as bad as a bold lie. Or just there's just bold lying going on. So, yeah, you know.
Well, John.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, John, all presidents try to make themselves look as good as they can. You know, they're like somebody going on a blind date. You know, you want to make yourself look as good as you can. And I don't fault them for that. This administration, more than any other, though, has a fundamental problem with the truth. And Kellyanne Conway's alternate fact statements brought that right to the fore.
When it comes to other presidents, though, some of our listeners are saying you can't say that the presidency hasn't made Bill Clinton richer, Barack Obama richer. Barack Obama goes out and he's giving speeches to Wall Street pretty soon after he is, you know, and this is a guy who understands the optics of that, and he's still giving speeches to Wall Street, big dollars associated with
absolutely.
It. The presidency itself is a pretty enriching thing.
Yes, and Trump made a big deal about Hillary Clinton, who I don't have any court for. She tried to get me fired when I was at the New York Times, and then followed my implicit advice in the story she tried to get me fired over. But, you know, Hillary Clinton was criticized for the big fee she got for giving Wall Street speeches in which basically she said nothing of consequence. Donald Trump did speeches like that, too, and got even bigger fees than Hillary Clinton did. I mean, there's a real problem with money in our politics. And in my trilogy that I mentioned earlier, you know, I write a lot about this. This is a real fundamental problem. Trump is a much more difficult example of this, however, because unlike a businessman who is building wealth, Donald Trump was someone who comes into a business the same way the mob does. He squeezes every dollar he can out of it. He doesn't pay his bills. He will try not to pay his workers. And then he lets the business fold. You know, there are still profitable casinos in Atlantic City, but among the first to fold were Donald's Trump's because Donald didn't know how to run a casino, as I reported in other books, and he did not reinvest in the business. He's not a wealth creator. He is a cash extractor.
On Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. at Finger Lakes Community College, David K. Johnston will be there talking about his new book. The theme of the speech is Trump, Day 365, What Just Happened. It's really a conversation, and they've asked me to moderate. I'll be there on Sunday afternoon, so maybe we will see you there. 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon at Finger Lakes Community College. It's the Ewing Forum, E-W-I-N-G. Jump online and get tickets now because I don't know the state of tickets currently, but it's 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And down to our last minute here, David, What do you plan to do going forward? And one of the things our listeners are asking is, what do you expect the American public to do with information like this that we get in your book?
Well, I think people need to understand what Trump is doing to our government. And if you don't read my book, you're not going to know. You just can't cover this in this appearance or all the TV appearances I do on CNN and MSNBC and elsewhere. And then I hope we make better choices in the future. The most important thing coming up is the November elections. If Republicans continue to control Congress, this will go on. If they don't, there's likely to be a change. That's going to pose its own constitutional problems. I'll be glad to come back and talk about. But, you know, our government was created by us to serve us. And that's what we need to remember. It's our government. We should act like owners.
But you don't think that whatever happens that this administration will end well, do you?
There is no good ending to this story. That's exactly right. We will endure. We'll get through this. But there is no good ending. Whether Donald Trump is impeached, whether he is voted out of office in the primaries or the general election, I believe Donald, unless indicted, convicted, and tried, will go around the country fomenting violence as he did during the campaign.
Oh, I hope you're wrong.
I do too, but I've known him for 30 years.
David K. Johnston is an investigative journalist and the author of the new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. He invites you to prove where he is wrong and will correct it in the book if you can find it. So critics and supporters of Donald Trump, we're listening. David will listen as well. You can find him where? How do they contact you, David?
DCReport.org or David K, C-A-Y, Johnston.com, and the back of the book has my email.
All right. Thank you very much for the time here, and I'll see you Sunday afternoon at the Ewing Forum in Canandaigua.
Thanks, Evan.
All right. Much more connections coming up.